You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio. On the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
That's right. We say what we want. Welcome. I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m., this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address such issues as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, and dealing with addictions. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help, and new innovations in the areas of health and security for your family. With over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate enough to meet and work with some of the top professionals in these areas of expertise. And today, we are going to deal with a topic that many people out there are not familiar with, but it is something that's going on, and it is something that that really needs to be addressed. I'm thrilled to have as my guests today two such talented and caring professionals in anti-human trafficking activists, Dottie Laster and Pastor Carrie Decker. Carrie is the founder and president of MillionKids.org. This nonprofit organization offers vocational training and business startup for Southeast Asian girls that have been rescued from human trafficking, as well as just being able to help deal with the problem at hand. Now, what I'd like to do now is I'm gonna bring Carrie on, and then in a little bit we're gonna have Dottie calling in. So, Carrie, you're in the studio with us today. Thank you for being here.
It's great to be here, Alan. Thank you for having me. Hey, I'd like to just make a little clarification on MillionKids.org. Is that we're really not just focusing on Southeast Asia, but our goal is really to help solve the problem of human trafficking, particularly related to children, here in America and throughout the world. We're a 501c3 nonprofit that is a public benefit nonprofit. We're not religious, and so anybody who wants to can kind of get on board with us. And even though that I'm a pastor, we have no religious agenda with MillionKids.org. Our goal is to help alleviate the human suffering that these kids go through, which I've seen firsthand for myself.
Well, what got you involved in helping the victims of human trafficking?
Well, you know, in all honesty, Alan, I wasn't going out and looking for this. This was not on, it wasn't even on my radar screen as far as where I was going with my career. That it was one of these things that kind of came along and found me. And it just so happens that I received an informational DVD from a colleague of mine. And on that informational DVD, it was about a program in Southeast Asia that was helping girls who've been trafficked. And it featured a labor trafficked girl. And, you know, we think, well, you know, these kids are working hard and so on and so forth. But I don't think that we really understand the impact and the suffering that these kids face. This particular girl was working in a junkyard in Southeast Asia. She was probably about 13 or 14 years old. And it was not just the labor conditions that she was working under, but her owner kind of assumed that it was his right as an additional perk to use her anytime that he wanted to for his own sexual appetites, along with his sons had that right, at least what they thought.
Yeah. Carrie, let me hold you just for a moment. I think we have Dottie calling in. One moment. And Dottie, can you hear me? Dottie, are you with us?
Dottie.
Well, hello. There we go. Dottie, can you hear us?
I can.
There we go. Yes, we can hear you now. This is great. All right.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dottie Laster. She has built a reputation as a dedicated advocate against human trafficking. She is joining us now via Skype. And Dottie, if you can just listen right along. We've got some questions for you. In fact, we have some listener questions as well. And Carrie, if you can continue.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I was talking about how I got involved with this.
Yes.
And I saw this informational DVD about a girl who was trafficked in Southeast Asia. She's about 13 or 14 at the time. Mm-hmm. And she was working there in a junkyard. And I've been, matter of fact, I've been to Southeast Asia. I'm leaving tomorrow to return for my fifth time. And the conditions in which she lived was just deplorable. It really was, it boggles our mind, you know, living here in the West, what this girl had to deal with. Besides that, not only just the working environment is that, like I said, that she was assumed, that the owners assumed that because she was their slave, that they could use her anytime that they wanted to for their own sexual appetites. And after that, in all honesty, Alan, what happened with me is I was sitting there in my office and I was watching this and I was reduced to tears when I saw that story of that girl. And for me, the world kind of divides up into two types of people. People who wring their hands and say, well, something must be done. This is a horrible thing. You know, however many millions mm-hmm. of people in the world right. are facing human trafficking. And I've heard, you know, 27 million, 31 million or whatever else. And instead of just sitting there and saying something must be done, I decided at that moment that I must do something. And so I decided to get involved. And I contacted the lady who ran the shelter. It was a startup shelter for these kids. And I said, hey, why don't you come out and talk to us? And from there, you know, the rest is kind of history, how mm-hmm. I've gotten involved with this project.
Well, let me introduce our listeners to Dottie a little bit more. I met Dottie out in Denver, and she was a keynote speaker for the World Association of Detectives Conference. At that conference, we were celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Human Rights Doctrine that it's signed by many countries throughout the world, saying that we are going to dedicate ourselves to human rights throughout the world. Dottie, along with Larry Gasson, put together an incredible seminar for us. I mean, if we would have had a half a day, I would have loved to have seen them be able to continue and tell us more. Dottie, can you give us some of the statistics? I mean, let's, especially for our American listeners, let them fully understand just how much of a problem this is.
Well, human trafficking, which includes forced labor and commercial sex, occurs in every country in the world and every state in the United States. At any one time, there's 27 million people enslaved. The low estimates in the State Department and the Department of Justice agree these are low estimates, that at least 20,000 people are brought into the United States annually. Those are people that cross borders to get into the United States. Now, add to that are U.S. citizens who are mentally impaired, homeless, and possible teenage runaways. To that number, and realize that it grows every year. It's a crime that grows exponentially every day, every hour, and there is no one that is not at risk for this to be in their community or to have someone they know at risk for this type of exploitation.
Well, and I think for some of our listeners, that's probably a shocking statistic to them, because I know that most Americans believe it happens somewhere else. Do you find that as well?
Absolutely. When I'm out presenting or speaking to groups, that is one of the common comments that come right away, is I always thought it happened in Asia or, you know, somewhere else. And it is quite shocking to know that it not only happens other places, but it happens here. And we are a huge draw, a very large destination country, as well as a source country, which, again, if you think about it, is something that we're not told in our usual education. We remember that slavery ended a very long time ago, and we're done with that. And the United States has a very difficult concept in dealing with slavery, because it was so horrible for us. It's not something the United States is proud of. So it's a unique time in history to revisit this and hopefully get it stopped for real this time.
Well, I know that someone has said that statistics don't bleed, but what are some of the stories that both of you can share with us about these girls who have been trafficked and what it is that they've gone through?
Well, let me just start with that, Alan, if you don't mind. And for me, I've never met a statistic.
Exactly. Exactly.
When I'm doing this work and in my travels, I understand the need for respective victims and or survivors of this crime, but also I think that that's part of the problem with this particular issue, is that we throw out numbers and we talk about numbers, but I've never met a statistic. I've only met real girls and kids. Mm-hmm. Who have been victimized in ways that are just unimaginable for us to consider. I mean, we're talking about children. In one of our partner shelters there in Southeast Asia that I'm going to go visit in just a couple days, is that we have kids that are at our shelter that range in age from about 4 years old up to their early 20s. And when you stop and think about that, and I go and I see these kids, and I look into their faces, and I look at their hands, and I'm thinking, these are just the hands of a little kid. And the types of things that they've had to see and endure and experience in their own short lifetime is just unimaginable. We're talking about children who are raped 7 to 15 times a day, sometimes up to 40 times a day, 7 days a week. That's what their life becomes. When the kids that are sexually trafficked, that's what their life becomes. And really, there's no way out of it. The only way that you kind of graduate from that experience is typically that they get some sort of disease and they die, and some sexually transmitted disease and die. Matter of fact, we had one girl at our partner shelter there in Southeast Asia. She, her sister began working in the brothel when she was 16. And this girl was labor trafficked when she was just a preteen. And then she came and started working at the brothel when she was 12. So she's serving drinks and servicing men at the age of 12. By the time she came to our shelter, that she was an extremely emotionally damaged kid. You know, I mean, sure. We take for granted kind of this atmosphere where we grow up and we go to school and then we play and we do our homework and we watch TV and we play video games and so on and so forth. But these kids' reality is just something that's hard for us to kind of wrap our heads around. Matter of fact, one of the last times I saw her, she was a girl who ultimately started cutting herself and self-mutilation. And she told me, when I was talking to her through a translator, we were sitting in a park, and she says, I just don't understand why I'm alive. She says, I don't see any purpose for my life. She'd returned, unfortunately, and we gave her the very best efforts that we could to help her out. But she returned to the streets. She was just so emotionally damaged. She couldn't process a lot of this and kind of just work through her own healing, which we really care about. We not only want to help these kids, and we not only want to help them physically, but also emotionally and also actually economically. That's mm-hmm. one of our goals.
Well, before we go into that,
yeah.
Dottie, please help us now and give us a success story, because after that story of the girl who has gone back out, give us a success story, because I think that's one of the things that we all need to know is that there is good things being done out there and that there are success stories.
Absolutely. And that is an important message for people to know. You're in an amazing time period where you can be a part of making a success out of something that is so bad it's hard to imagine. I have a client that I helped years ago that I stay in contact with, who was in a similar place that Carrie's describing, as not understanding why she was alive and having, you know, I honestly, you know, at home with my husband, I'm saying I can't give her a lot of good reasons I can't give her a lot of good reasons to work with right at this moment. Years later, from that situation, she now is married with a young child of her own. And I visited her recently, and she was so proud that she had filled out all the applications to get her daughter in preschool.
That's great.
And that she could read and write and advocate for her daughter. And she said, I learned that from you, Dottie. And I seldom get teary-eyed, but that did it.
Well,
that
as
definitely
it should.
Moved to me beyond explanation.
Uh-huh. And carry on, continuing on with the positive side, I know I know that your Million Kids organization is helping some of these women get jobs and literally and I say women, they're kids, they're girls. Sure. When you're dealing with them, or boys. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing in getting them a career so that they don't go back into this life.
Well, let's see if we can kind of connect the dots on that, because this particular girl that I was telling you about, her sister is also in the program with one of our partners, our partner shelter there. And like I say, our goal is, millionkids.org, our goal is to essentially become the United Way of human trafficking. And so what we want to do is that we want to raise money. 1.2 million kids are trafficked every year throughout the world. And just to kind of help put that in perspective, if you emptied out the city of Dallas, Texas, and filled it up with nothing but trafficked kids, and you did that year after year after year, I just looked it up on the internet this morning. According to the census of in Dallas, Texas, 1.2 million people in the city of Dallas itself, not mm-hmm. the metro area, but the city of Dallas. Well, you fill that up with kids year after year after year, then you got some sort of idea of the scope of this problem. And so we want to partner with the people that are getting the job done. Mm-hmm. It's just not about us, because the problem's bigger than us. And so what we're doing, for instance, at this partner shelter that we work with in Southeast Asia, is that we have a program, a vocational training program, that I happen to be the program director of there. And we completely train the older girls in some sort of vocational skill. We have a cosmetology program. We have a tailoring program. We have a wedding boutique. We're starting up, our goal is to start up a food catering or some sort of food mm-hmm. service program. And all other types of businesses were actually are kind of on the table right now for us to consider. But one of our girls, she just graduated from our program not too long ago. When they graduate, we give them a pearl pendant necklace. Nice. To help them to remember that beauty can come from suffering. And so, you know, the oyster, essentially, that right. It brings a lot of pain to that mm-hmm. oyster to make that pearl. But nevertheless, that there's beauty that comes from suffering. And we want those girls to understand that's the case. And what we do for the kids is that we not only provide them a vocational training free of charge, and we feed them and clothe them and take care of their medical care and all of that. But then once they graduate from our program, we set them up in business and completely underwrite their business startup costs for 1 year.
Okay. Well, and this is one of the things that I love, because this is not training to where they're learning to be an employee. They are learning to be an entrepreneur.
Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, because there are kids that are going to work. You know, there are the types of kids that can be entrepreneurs, but there are also kids that are just never going to be able to do that. Sure. What we want to do is we want to build businesses and infrastructures in the countries that we work with, where kids have options, because this is not just a sex problem, mm-hmm. that this is an economic issue. That's the reason why a lot of these kids are trafficked in the first place. And so we figure if we can solve the economic issue, that we can begin working on solving the economic issue while we're caring for the children, that we're going to be able to make that the option of selling a child a whole lot less viable. And so what we've done with this one girl there is that we've set her up in her own beauty salon, and she's just thriving. For me, it's worth it to see the smiles on their faces. And by the way, that I get absolutely nothing for working with these organizations, both with Million Kids and our partner organizations, that my salary is completely underwritten from other sources. And so all of the money that we raise, that we want to make sure gets into the hands of the kids and programs that are helping care for them. And that's our goal. And for me to see the smiles on the faces of these kids, that's the biggest payoff, to tell you the truth, to know that we're bringing hope where there was no hope.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Dottie, we did get some questions that came in, and one of the questions was, have you or your people within the organization ever been a target to the criminals? You know, in other words, is there a risk now for someone like yourself, who has been so active and has been very public about this? Is there a concern? Is there additional security that you need to take now for yourself or for your own people?
That's an excellent question. Yes and no. Yes, I am starting to see a change in the risk involved in this. When I first started doing this, there was absolutely no risk because the bad guys weren't aware that there was really a problem and that anyone would be looking for them to prosecute or arrest. So I would say it's a result of progress, and it will probably continue to increase. But at this point, yeah, I do change a few things that I do now, and while I don't change my message or my visibility, I am aware of a bit more security than I used to be.
Okay, and I think, and for both of you, I mean, how is law enforcement? Are they being more helpful now, or is it still a struggle? I mean,
Dottie can really speak to that because she's an expert in the whole law enforcement interface with this particular issue.
Dottie, how are they doing on this?
They're doing good, and there's a lot of room for improvement. It's amazing. My job has been to train law enforcement in the past, and I've really enjoyed it. I've trained over 5,000 police officers and federal agents on this issue. And so, again, talking back early when I got into this, I would walk into a group of 200 police officers who would be in various stages of sleeping or texting or whatever. And within a few minutes, definitely would have their attention. And now it's not something that they're so much, usually by the time I get in to train them, they have a little heads up of what it's about and they understand. There are some departments, many, I forgot how many departments there are in the United States, but it's thousands. There's definitely many left that need the training. A good example is on MSNBC currently. There are two shows running right now, Sex Slaves in America, which I was actually a part of behind the scenes on getting that documentary made, and its fellow show, Sex Slaves in the Suburbs. And if you focus on Sex Slaves in the Suburbs, you will see that the police departments were not aware that U.S. citizens could be trafficked, and the families had absolute, in some cases, no help from the police department, which if you watch the show, it will be very moving and frustrating for you to see what happened. On the Sex Slaves in America, there's actually a scene where you see police officers, they're actually guarding the trafficking location. They're paid by the bar owners to work off-duty but in uniform. And some cities have this policy. Well, if you think about that and there's victims inside there, they absolutely know they can't go to the police, whether that officer was corrupt or not. The understanding from the victim is that the police work for the people keeping them inside. And that's a problem that really needs to be addressed.
Now, is that problem as prevalent here in the United States as it is in other countries?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
And I think that one of the things that we kind of have to maybe put this in a particular frame of reference or context is that a lot of times the victims are people who have been brought in from other countries, and they don't understand necessarily how our culture and our society works. And so if they do happen to see an off-duty officer protecting a business, quote-unquote, that they're going to assume that the connection that this carries over into their professional life,
even if they aren't assuming it, if they wouldn't normally assume it, it's very easy for that person that's enslaving them to plant that seed.
Exactly. Yeah. Sure. Exactly. And so I think that
on the positive side, the most amazing days that I've had have been from law enforcement helping the victims. So I want to paint a clear picture.
Okay.
That once they're trained and know and really once they understand what we're doing, I don't seem to have much problem in getting them to use all their resources. It's amazing what they can do. And anywhere from federal officers, which would be Immigration and Customs Enforcement, FBI, actually Social Security Administration has armed investigators with badges. I had no idea until I worked these cases. The postal inspectors, and my best partner many times is the Department of Labor. They don't arrest, but they can do a lot of things that other agencies can't do. So when you combine all that together, we do have an absolute wonderful justice system that makes this a high priority. The only thing to add to that is we still need to get training to many, many more of these of these departments, and it needs to be expanded to where they understand that it doesn't matter where the victim came from, it's what happened. And so that's something I work at constantly.
Yeah, and you're right. I think it's important that people know that's the exception, not the rule.
Sure, sure.
But and Dottie, on a different note, are you on a portable?
No.
No? Okay, because that in that last little part, we were getting a little more static, so I was just wondering if you were in a portable, and if you'd walked further away, I was going to go walk back to where you were in the beginning, because it was clearer.
Okay. I'll see if there's anything interfering, and I'll make sure there's nothing on, but no, I'm on my landline.
Oh, okay. I mean, I think if one of you can just, I mean, walk the people through in a short thing. I mean, in just a couple of minutes, walk them through where the majority of the problem is in the two major areas, the labor area and in the sex area.
I don't know for sure if we can really parse out where, you know, how much of is, if I'm understanding the question correctly, how much of it's labor and how much of it's sex. You know what?
Well, I'm not saying what the percentages is. In other words, how they get involved in it. In other words, if people watch television, and you know, which is also, I mean, how accurate is that? I mean, you know, share with our listeners the part of what they show on television that is accurate and the part that isn't. You know, the part where they, you know, they've taken some theatrical license and that really isn't how it happens.
Hey, I'll make a little quick plug here if you want to, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Is that there's, and it's not really of any benefit to Million Kids directly, but there is a great film out right now called Bought, B-A-H-T. And that particular film illustrates how kids get involved in this whole, Bought, by the way, means it's the Thai currency. Mm-hmm. And so it helps us to understand how kids get involved in this. And a lot of times that there's deception involved, you know, I mean, in all honesty, there's not a whole lot of parents. There are some out there, quite frankly, but there's not a whole lot, thank goodness, that want to do this.
Right.
But when you are desperate and you're poor, somebody comes along and says, hey, we got a great job in a particular city, and for a nanny, your daughter would be perfect for that, and that that she can be able to make some good money, help the family, send back some money to you, and to show that we're really serious about this is that if you'll sign the contract today and your daughter can go with us, we'll give you $200. Well, $200 in some of these places, it represents about a half year's salary. Mm-hmm. And so when you got 10 or 12 kids that you're trying to feed, and some of our kids, in all honesty, that when they come to us at the malnourishment and the starvation that they've experienced is just incredible. But when you're looking at that type of desperation, that and oftentimes there are uneducated folks that they say, well, this looks like a good deal. They'll sign the contract, take the money, and that's the last they see of their kid. Mm. And so they come through posing as job recruiters. They come through as posing as whoever else, and sometimes kids are literally kidnapped and taken from their homes, and they end up in these forced in. Into the sex trade oftentimes, and these fellows, and these actually fellows and ladies, are experts at what they do. I'm talking about the traders, and they have ways of, essentially, they call it seasoning a kid or a child, and they have ways of making sure the child becomes compliant, and starving the child, isolating the child, forcing the child to take drugs, raping the child or whatever else. And pretty soon, when you've been beaten down, the human will has been beaten down that much, you'll do whatever you need to do to survive. And that's how it's kind of the entry point for these children to get involved. One of the problems with sex trafficking versus the drug trade is that the whole sex trafficking is a renewable commodity. If you want to look at it from, you know, and I know that sounds crass, but you can sell this child over and over and over and over again. And so once you've scored a drug deal, well, that's done, and your product's gone. But here you have this renewable commodity. And so I don't know for sure. Dottie knows a little bit more about how widespread this problem is today. I've heard that it's the second largest criminal enterprise in the world. I don't know if that's correct, Dottie.
Dottie?
Yes, actually, according to the Department of Justice, it's the second most lucrative crime out there, which makes it also the second largest. It's tied with the sale of illegal weapons and second only to the sale of illegal drugs. When I say it touches every country in the world and every state in the United States, that is absolutely why that is possible and how that is happening. I'll talk just a bit about some of the ways people get pulled into this. It's definitely by fraud or deception with the promise of two things. One could be a better economic situation, such as a job, and the other thing could be attention or love, which is quite effective on some of the runaways and at-risk youth here. And it can be in the guise of a friendship, of an online buddy that begins texting and instant messaging a girl, or it could be somebody literally hanging around at the mall or the park or the playground. So you have to educate kids here in the United States to understand that they need to watch for someone who could be manipulating their relationship. It's not something that teens are kind of wired to do. They feel invincible. And then as far as outside the country, it is definitely starts with a very good opportunity that turns into a fraudulent situation. So it may look very good on the front end as with a document, a down payment. Even victims have borrowed money in order to be put in a job, and they're expected to pay that money back. And I have an example a group of people from the Philippines who had master's and PhD level degrees who were signed very legal looking documents, and once they got to the United States, that was not the case. So it can be anywhere. Anywhere there's a demand for a lot of labor that's cheap and maybe, you know, unskilled, or where there's a large demand for commercial sex, and especially young commercial sex.
Yeah. And sometimes these kids actually, because their families are so poor in some of these third world countries, that they have a profound sense of obligation of helping out and making sure that mom and dad and their siblings have an opportunity. And so some of them are just youngsters who will kind of essentially sign up to go work at a job, not knowing what they're getting involved in, because they want to make sure that they can help out. And you know, if the tables were turned, you stop and think about it. If you were in a situation where your own kids or your own siblings were just barely surviving or even to the point of starvation, and somebody comes along and says, you can help out, here's a way. And I'm not saying that they won't posture the whole sex thing up front, mm-hmm. but here's a way, here's a job or whatever else. If you're a child and you have a sense of obligation, that oftentimes they get involved. And from there, in this particular film, that's how this girl, they interviewed one of the girls at one of our partner shelters. And that's how she got started. She was labor trafficked to start. She was actually labor trafficked twice. And then eventually she was sex trafficked after that. And it was all about this fraudulent activity that we got an opportunity. It's an opportunity that oftentimes sucks them into this.
And I know that you know, I mean, all of us are really disgusted by this. And I told you that we have some listener questions. There's one in particular that was addressed. It says, I have a question for your pastor. It says, if there's a God, then why does he let this stuff happen?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a great question, and let me just share with you that anybody who knows my particular story knows that I've struggled and wrestled a lot with these types of questions, is that I've spent a long time with the philosophical issues and also kind of competing, you know, truth claims about worldviews and approaches to life. And so God and I have had more than our fair share of arguments about why he doesn't do something about this until finally I got the answer. And the answer is just simply this, is that, and I didn't hear a voice or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. But I had a strong and settled conviction kind of come upon my heart one day where, why don't you do something about this? Mm-hmm. And when I began to think about it, you know, the world is a place where that's filled with suffering. But it's people who make the difference. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., William Wilberforce, Mother Teresa, Jonas Salk, is that those it's people who have decided this suffering is intolerable and I'm going to do something about it. It's easy to quote statistics. It's easy to listen to radio shows. It's easy to kind of, you know, lament this problem. But at the end of the day, that I can't remember, I think it was Edmund Burke who said that all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
Yes, and you are correct. That is who said that. Well, you bring up a great point, because most of us cannot rescue victims, you know, or, you know, most cannot serve in shelters or work in a vocational training program. What is it that they can do? I mean, I believe there's something that we can all do. I'm in a similar field. I'm thankful to what you're doing. I'm thankful to what Dottie's doing. Let's tell our listeners, what is it that they can do?
Okay, of course, in tough economic times, nobody wants to hear that they, you know, donate money. But let's put it in perspective. Most of us in America, tough economic times means that we're going to have to cut back on our cable bill. It means that we're going to have to park our SUV. You know, I mean, you know, in carpool with a buddy to work or something. Yeah. That's for an American that we can't go out and we can't drop $50, $60, $70 for a dinner out. And for an American, for many Americans, that's a tough economic time. And so I would challenge us. You know, we've been given great opportunities in this country, and it's not just so that we can kind of gobble up all the world's resources and use them for ourselves. We got 27 million people in the world that are enslaved. And we can't solve all the world's problems. I understand that. But we can make a big difference by doing something and donating. Think about this for a minute, Ellen. Is that where we work in Southeast Asia, and there's other places that we want to partner with throughout the world, but where we work in Southeast Asia, you can underwrite the complete and total business startup and one girl's living expenses for $5,000 a year.
Okay. Do you hear that, folks? $5,000 a year. So sit down. For those of you that have sat down to write your own business plan and said, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, I'm going to write my own business plan, and then you put down, now what am I going to need to get me through that first year? I'm guessing $5,000 doesn't get you far.
So certainly donating, and they could go to our website. We have it all set up online at millionkids.org. Okay. And so they can donate through the website, and it's secure, and we work with bona fide people, and nobody's going to hassle you on all of this stuff, and we're not going to bird dog you and try to, you know, squeeze you for more money and stuff like that. Okay.
So again, to reach you then, that's millionkids.com. So it's
.org.
.org.
Yes.
.org. That's millionkidsplural.org.
Yes, and that's okay. The way that they can visit our website. Another thing that people can do is volunteer. There's plenty of good agencies that help with this, both religious agencies and also secular nonprofits, IJM, World Vision, Project Rescue, Free the Slaves, the Polaris Project, Stop the Traffic, and so on. And I'm sure there's plenty of others that I didn't mention, Frederick Douglass Family Foundation, and so on and so forth. Volunteer. Some of these are listed on our site. We're going to go ahead and flesh out that site and list more of our designated partner agencies. You can raise awareness. You could write an editorial. You could host a speaker. Contact me. Contact me or Dottie or one of our colleagues. You could contact me at millionkids@pacbell.net by email. And, you know, of course, you know, we're going to have to wade through those, give us a little bit of time to work through that. But to host a speaker and talk about other ways to get involved, you can do something. There's just a whole lot of hand-wringing that goes along. 27 million people, what can I do? Well, I tell you that you can't solve the big picture problem. You just can't do that. But if you can make a difference for one kid...
Exactly.
That's all you have to do. Mm-hmm. You know? Or even make part of a difference for one kid.
Yeah. Dottie, here's a question that some people may have out there. At a time right now, as we said, that, you know, for however you compare it as Americans, I mean, we are having a difficult time. Share with our listeners why they should care about what's happening on the other side of the world. I mean, first of all, it's not just happening there, but why do we also need to care about that?
Absolutely. I live near the Texas-Mexico border, and I don't know if you've probably seen stories in the news about the actual, and I believe it's happening in the Arizona-Texas border too, there's actual gunfights along the border where criminal gangs are stealing smuggled cargo, meaning people, mm-hmm. from each other. And I'm working on several cases right now where people have gone missing, where children have gone missing, those from outside the country and inside the United States. I know it's much easier to go around thinking this crime isn't going to touch us, but I guarantee it will. And if it's left unchecked, I mean, I just can't even imagine how bad that could be. We cannot have a place where children can not walk to school without the threat of a commercial organization attempting to either seduce them or grab them for exploitation. And I say commercial, meaning we're all brought up to be aware of you know, an individual predator. But we're moving now and seeing now the exponential growth of commercial exploitation. And I'll cite a quick case out of San Antonio, Texas, where a man became a boyfriend to an employee that he worked with at a restaurant. And so she was around 25 years old with a 5-year-old daughter and an 18-month-old daughter. And his reason for befriending her was in order to sell those children, which he did get caught doing, selling to an FBI undercover agent for commercial sex. Those are U.S. citizens. Uh-huh. Those are in a very wholesome town that you would just be shocked that that could happen. And you'd think that's an unusual case, but this happens on a regular basis. They had another similar child case just a couple of months before. Now think about, those are the ones that got caught. Mm-hmm. Those aren't the ones that are happening every day. So when I say this is important and it can touch your area, yes, if you know a child, if you've been a child, or if you have a child, this is important to you.
Well, and that goes actually right to some of our listener questions. And I want to make sure I get those through, because believe it or not, we're already starting to run short of time. But one of the listener questions we have is, it says, I've heard of girls getting trapped in these situations and even young boys, but it appears they're very much trapped. How do you get them out?
In the United States, we use law enforcement, absolutely trained law enforcement. There's 42 task forces throughout the United States, and when I've worked on those, my job has been to coordinate law enforcement and victim service efforts. Outside the United States, Carrie can talk more about that, but definitely nonprofit organizations are very key.
Yeah, nonprofits are a number of NGOs or non-government organizations that help along those lines. And then, believe it or not, there are also professional slave hunters that work to help out with this particular problem, and they go out and posing as clients or customers in some of these brothels. They take note of the underage children that they assume to be underage children that are working in the brothels. They work with the law enforcement, oftentimes with the military in those countries, and they come back and then extricate the kids from the situation. Hey, I just want to say briefly, Alan, sure. about this whole issue of why should we care about what's happening in other places of the world. First of all, we cannot build a fence high enough around America keep all of the bad out.
Yep.
You know, I mean, we could have this isolationism mentality, but it is not going to work. We cannot build a fence high enough. And so I think that it's a whole lot smarter strategy for us to export compassion and for us to export getting involved both locally and globally, and for us to mobilize people. You know, why not Americans? You stop and think about it. It just makes good moral sense, but it also makes good political sense You know, our image is damaged enough in other parts of the world.
Right.
Why not get involved? And when kids are growing up and they stop and think, they say, who was there to help me when times were tough in my life? And they can look back and they say, well, those Americans, they're not that bad after all. You know?
Yeah. And Dottie, I know that Carrie talked a little bit about how to get a hold of him and how to get a hold of millionkids.org. How do we get a hold of you, or how can listeners get a hold of you if they have questions, if they have comments? Now, first of all, I want to tell everybody, you can get your questions and comments to us at answersforthefamily.com. That's answers, the numeral for, thefamily.com. We would love to have your comments. We have a blog. And the shows are saved. So if you just tuned in and you went, wow, what were they talking about a little bit ago? Within 24 hours, we will have the show listed up on the site, and you can go back, listen to it. You can download it. You can send it to your friends, whatever you'd like to do. So you can put your comments there. But if you want to reach Dottie directly, Dottie, how will they do that?
Oh, thank you. I would welcome comments, questions, observations. This is how I stay in touch with the communities and become more effective when I am out there. So I request that if you have comments, to please send them. You can reach me through the website, millionkids.org, or you can reach me at lasterglobal@gmail.com, which is lasterglobal@gmail.com.
Thank you. We've got a couple more questions I want to get through, just so that because I want to thank the people that are sending the questions in. We do appreciate them, and know that one of you will be receiving a Starbucks gift card when Parker picks which ones we thought was the best. One of the questions is, how do these kids do after you rehabilitate them? And does age make a difference in their success? Meaning the earlier you rescue them, the better? With a question mark.
Well, I wish that I could give a clear picture of kind of how all of this works, because what I've seen is that some kids that are rescued at a young age, and they come into a healthy and stabilizing environment, and they grow, that they thrive, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes the kids, when they're rescued at an older age, the same is true. And I just don't know. I don't know exactly how to... If there's a particular way of saying, well, this child's way of processing trauma, or at a particular age of processing trauma, I would say that probably the smartest strategy is to get the kids out of it as fast as possible. You know, as we've had this conversation here, UNICEF, and I don't make up these statistics, so you can just look them up online yourself. UNICEF says 1.2 million kids are trafficked every year. So I did the math on that. That means every 26 seconds, another kid is facing this nightmare. Hmm. That means right now, while we're having this conversation, there's some child out there who is wishing that somebody could connect with them and get them out of the hell that they're living through. And so that's all I want to do. Once we get them, we'll work with them. It doesn't matter how damaged they are. And also, I want to be very clear about this. We have no agenda about them having to adopt our particular point of view, or our particular philosophy, or our particular religious outlook, or our particular political approach to life. I just want to be indiscriminate about compassion, and I'll just let God sort it out in the end. You know?
Thank you.
And I've never met a victim that said, "Oh, I wish you would have come tomorrow. It was busy today." It's more like, "Where have you been?" Even no matter how quick we get there.
All right. Well, first, I want to thank both of you for being here. I mean, we really are almost out of time. It's such an important subject. I hope that the people out there listening understand that this is something that's happening, and it's something that is growing. You know, for those that thought that, at least in the United States, that this is something that died out, just the opposite. It is a growing industry. It's very sad, but it is true, and we need to be there. We need to do what it is that we can do to help. So again, and I thank both of you for everything that you're doing, for coming on here and for getting the word out. And for those that are going to be continuing to listen, Dottie will be on again in 2 weeks. You'll be on with Larry Gasson. We will talk more on this subject, as well as maybe some professional coaching. We'll keep you posted via the press releases. Next week, we're going to have a very interesting guest. This is someone that I met. Actually, I met in Denver. He is from Germany. He'll be calling in from there, and he is a human behavior and consciousness expert. His name is Florian Schlosser, and I believe that you will enjoy listening to him. He has a very unique way of discussing his methodology that empowers people to the truth. So listen for that. For those of you that are going to the IECA conference, that's going to be November 7th, or during the conference, November 7th at 9 a.m. to midnight. Go and listen to the Espiro party. Okay, if you're going to be there, listen to it. It will be fun. Again, thank you, everybody. I appreciate it, and we will talk to you in a week. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
There's something about the way you try to look. It's getting right to me, deeper than it really should. What are you, an angel, or just looking that good? When you